Barry Shuck joins the show. Barry, Pro Football Scope, how are things going today?
Was a weird weekend for the NFL. All these, you know, things that happen that normally don't happen. Mike Evans got suspended for a fight. Bobby Hart, who played for the Giants, played for the Bengals.
Yeah.
He punched a coach. somebody threw a bottle at the Browns owner, and then somebody slapped Murray as he was coming over there to hang with Cardinal fans after the Raiders win. And what a weird weekend.
Oh, my goodness. What was it ever? And that's the thing that's so nuts is that we're looking at a lot of things that happened off the field and not even what happened on the field. I mean, you mentioned the Cardinals game, and the Cardinals find a way to come back and win that game in overtime, a fumble recovery for a touchdown. The Browns and the Ravens blow their leads. The whole AFC North lost, and the Bills are continuing in their run of form, but so many crazy games and crazy things happened over the weekend in the NFL. Of course, there are a lot of good things to go along with that. But do you remember, or can you think of a weekend that's been as kind of crazy as this one? I mean, normally we don't see, we've seen comebacks, but for the Dolphins to come back down 21 twice and for a whole division to lose, I mean, I don't think we see these things very often, Barry.
No, and they're talking about Lamar Jackson being a candidate for MVP.
That too.
He looked like that in the first half. In the second half, he was horrible. He got sacked quite a bit. He just mishandled the ball. The defense just let their guard down. And the Rams almost lost to the Falcons. All the Falcons needed was two plays, and they would have been right back in it. And it's crazy some of the teams – that are just that are not doing well that were expected to do well, and other teams you don't expect them to be as good as they were. Like the Giants are 2-0, New England's 1-1, the Colts are 0-1-1. It's just the Dolphins are 2-0. It's teams that you didn't expect to do well that are now just rising above. And why are the Bengals 0-2?
Well, the offensive line stinks, and there's no that's the thing that was most interesting. So I'm not a fan that, gets all angry and says fire the coach after three games. They're not going to do that because they just extended Zach Taylor, and everything's going to be okay. I believe that, but I find it interesting that, and I think one of the things, Barry, that we've really realized, I think, over the last couple of weeks is the importance of the preseason. And as much as it may seem like a walkthrough and a joke and everything like that, a lot of the teams that we're seeing struggle didn't have their quarterbacks playing in the preseason. I mean, the Bengals, Joe Burrow, of course, he had his appendix burst, so he couldn't play. I don't think he was going to play even if he was healthy. Matt Stafford really started off too. He's played okay, but the Rams have struggled. Aaron Rodgers didn't play at all in the preseason. They've got no chemistry, or they're working on that now. I mean, we're seeing, I think, the importance of the preseason be focused on a little bit more. What are your thoughts on that and the importance of the preseason? Maybe having a light shown on it now.
Yeah, well, in the past, they had four preseason games. Of course, they took one away and added a regular season game. So what teams started doing is the last 2 weeks they would bring in the teams that they were going to play in those games. So whoever your opponent is in the second preseason game, they would, if whoever stadium it was at, they would come in for about 2-3 days. And then the final preseason game, that team would come in for 2-3 days, and they would have at least 2 scrimmage games. So they would practice against each other, then have a scrimmage, and they would have referees and they had flags and they have game situations. Well, the reason for that is because they didn't have that fourth preseason game. In the fourth preseason game, traditionally, the starters played the entire first half. So one team's starting defense would play the entire first half against the other starting offense, and they could get used to the new plays, get used to the new coordinator, get used to the new right guard and then the new punter and the new slot receiver, that they could go against competition. So now they're having to do scrimmages, and, you know, it's not like a live regular season game because there's nothing on the line. It's just trying to get better and trying to go through your offense. And another thing is in preseason, you really don't show your hand on offense at all. You just kind of go out there with vanilla. But I think what coaches now are thinking is, I don't want to get my star quarterback or my star running back or my star left tackle hurt before the first preseason game starts.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of the same. I think you're right. But also at the same time now, we're seeing teams that like the Bengals have had chemistry issues. I mean, I know, and I think part of the blame has to go on Joe Burrow a little bit. The blame's going around everybody, I would say. Everybody wants to blame the O-line. Joe Burrow has struggled a little bit, but there's communication issues on the line. And when you got a quarterback who has got a new offensive line, I feel like there's some cohesiveness that has to be built there. You got the Green Bay Packers, and they've got three or four new wide receivers in there. Only Alan Lazard and Randall Cobb, really, they have back. The other guys are either added in free agency or they're drafted. And their starting quarterback's not playing because he's out for the preseason. He's getting rest. I mean, even, you know, Tom Brady, I think, you know, the Buccaneers have figured it out. They've had a good enough team, and Tom is so good that it's okay. But they've got all the offensive line issues. And Tom even played in a preseason game. So, I mean, I think we're seeing, in a way, some of the importance of the preseason, and while it, you know, how things have changed and where they may be going, and I don't think they're ever going to get rid of preseason games, but, you know, there's maybe it was brought to the eye a little bit more. You mentioned some of the teams that have really struggled and other teams that have looked really good. As Barry Shuck and I are here on our Pro Football Scope Talk, taking a look at the NFL games, what was the most surprising performance of the weekend? Was it Miami coming back and winning? What is it, the Giants now being 2-0? Is it a certain team being 0-2, like the Titans now? They got killed against the Bills yesterday. If you were to pick one or two different things, what would those be, Barry?
I would say the weirdest and the strangest game, and the one that was most impressive, was the Cardinals coming back. I mean, the Cardinals were losing 20-0 at halftime, and then they just completely owned the second half. It was a tale of two teams. And they had to go into overtime. And, of course, when they went in overtime, Hunter Renfro, who used to play for Clemson, who never, ever, ever fumbles, coughed up the ball. Now, the guy came from behind. He didn't see him. The guy punched the ball. It wasn't trying to make a tackle, so it was definitely trying to cause a fumble. And it just was kind of a weird bounce. But that game in itself, for the Cardinals to be so down on the road, against, I feel, a very good Raiders team, was probably the most surprising. Another surprising game is how the Buffalo Bills have just been trouncing everybody they play. They're not beating people. They're just stomping them. And they're not beating bad teams. They're beating good teams. The Tennessee Titans are a team that won their division last year, is projected to be a playoff team. It was 7-7 after the first quarter, and then it was just game on for Buffalo. You take Buffalo and Philadelphia. Philadelphia's come out of nowhere. They beat what should have been a very good Vikings team, 24-7. And the Eagles and the Bills just being so dominating in their games is very – I expected both of them to be good. I expected both of them to win their division. I expect both of them to go do well in the playoffs, but not to be so dominant so early in the season.
Yeah, I think the Bills, and it's crazy, you know, everybody seemed to be picking the Bills to win the Super Bowl, and they have been able to back that up. I think I'm with you on the Bills and the Eagles too. The Eagles are, they're an interesting team because they, over the course of the offseason, they've seemed to build up more and more hype, I think. You know, Jalen Hurts being the guy, you know, obviously the question being, can he be a franchise quarterback? You get A.J. Brown, you trade away Jalen Reagor, but in that you're able to improve your team over the course of the offseason, and those have, I'm with you, been the two most impressive teams. Now, of course, another I don't know if you expected the AFC South to be this bad, but the Tennessee Titans being 0-2, I think I'm with you, is a very big surprise. The Colts, I picked to actually win the division. They can't score any points. And right now, the Jacksonville Jaguars are the division leader, and based on how things look, at least, Jacksonville could easily be 2-0, based on how they were ahead late against Washington. Is that the weakest division in football?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no good team in there, and everybody assumed that the Colts would win that one, but Jacksonville should have beat the Washington. And they lost by six, and they came and they dominated the Colts and beat them 24-0. You know, there's a saying, it's not what your record is, it's who you play. So if you look at some of these teams, Buffalo has beaten two really good teams, whereas you take somebody like Philadelphia, has beaten Detroit and beaten Minnesota. Now, is Detroit better this year? Yes. Is Minnesota better this year? Yes. But are they playoff teams? I think once it gets down into the schedule where they play Arizona in week five, then they play the Dallas Cowboys. But if you look at their schedule is kind of weak. They play the Packers. They play Tennessee. They're going to play the Giants twice. Other than that, there isn't. I mean, they play the Bears. They play Washington twice. They play Houston. There's not a lot on their schedule. They could be a very dominating team and could, you know, conceivably only lose 3, 4, 5 games. But getting back to Jacksonville, Jacksonville's got a pretty tough sled ahead of them.
Yeah.
They're playing all the AFC West teams, so that means that they play the Raiders. That means that they play Kansas City, and they play Houston. But they play Dallas. But they've got some tough games coming up. They play Baltimore, which is not a normal game to play. They play the Giants. So it just depends. You know, Jacksonville, if they went 9-8, I think that'd be a victory for them. Will it be enough to win that division? Maybe. I guess it's going to depend on if Tennessee continues their slide. Who would have thought that the Bengals, the Raiders, and the Titans would be 0-2 after 2 weeks? Raise your hand.
I don't think anybody would be raising their hands at this point, especially, that's the crazy thing, is that the Bengals could easily be 2-0, but they've gotten off to slow starts offensively, and they lost to Dallas, and they didn't even have Dak Prescott. Not that it would have mattered, because Dak didn't look very good against that game, in the game against Tampa Bay, but to lose those two games, I think, is surprising, because you're favored in those games as well. I mean, the Titans, of course, favored in the game against the Giants in week one, and then the game against the Bills, I certainly expected it to be better than 41-7. Looking at the NFC West now, this is an interesting division, because Seattle wins that game against Russell Wilson, Arizona comes back to win, the Rams bounce back, the 49ers get a win, but Trey Lance goes down with that broken ankle and is having to have season-ending surgery. How big of an opportunity is this for Jimmy G to play well? And if he does, is there any inkling you think that the 49ers are like, you know what, maybe we made the wrong decision in getting Trey Lance?
Yeah, Jimmy G is a good quarterback. And I was surprised that a team did not trade for him in the offseason. He's the highest paid backup in the league. And now he's going to be probably one of the lowest paid starting quarterbacks in the league. He could prove his worth. I thought he proved his worth last year. He had a good season. He directed the team. That was viewed as a tough division. The Cardinals are an enigma. They've scored the most points in that division with 50 points, but they've also allowed 67 points on defense. So they've got a high-flying offense, and then they can't stop anybody. I really think San Francisco is going to win that division when everything is said and done.
Okay.
They've got a very up and down season. You know, they've got teams like Atlanta and Carolina on the schedule. But they got to play the Chargers. They got to play Miami. They got to play Tampa. They got to play the Raiders, and they got to play Arizona twice and the Rams twice. And I don't think Seattle will be that good. But those are some very, very hard games, and it just, if they can you know, win more of the difficult games than they can lose, and I think they're going to do something with it. The Rams, who knows? The Rams are a roller coaster.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. So what do you make of this off-the-field behavior of fans? I mean, you mentioned some of the stuff that's going on, you know, a treatment towards players and towards owners and everything like that. How do you think the Iranians are going to be brought in on all this stuff, if they even can be?
Yeah, they've already arrested somebody with the Browns situation, and what happened there is once Garrett Wilson scored that touchdown and it was tied before the extra point, there was a video on the sideline, and I don't know who shot it. I don't know if it was television or if it was somebody with the Browns or with NFL Films, but they turned as Jimmy Haslam was standing on the sideline near the end zone. He turned and walked towards the tunnel, which the tunnel was right there. And then out of the blue, a bottle comes flying towards him as he's walking towards the tunnel. He stops, he looks, he points up. I don't think anybody actually could see who it was, but I don't know how they found the person. I guess people in that area, they called enough people and they found out who it was. I tell you what, I don't know why a stadium would even sell glass bottles. I think it was an aluminum bottle, but if you take an aluminum beer can and it's full, or even if it's half full,
yeah,
that's a weapon. That's an absolute rocket. You get in a fight and pick up a full can of aluminum beer that's got a stem on it, which is a handle, and you've got a good weapon there. But they found him. They've arrested him. And the Kyler Murray situation, I watched that frame by frame, and a guy in a white shirt tried to high-five Murray, and then Murray came close. A Raiders fan behind a Cardinals fan who was wearing a jersey reached around the Cardinals fan and slapped Murray right on the face. Now, I read today they were talking about doing battery charges, but I read today where Kyler Murray said, hey, it's cool. It's in the moment. It didn't hurt me. I'm okay. I got my feelings hurt, but I'm doing fine. And I don't think they're going to pursue. I think they can find out who it was,
yeah,
but I don't think they're going to pursue that.
Well, yeah, it's certainly, you know, the fans are within their rights to be, you know, fans of the team. But when you start getting hitting people and all that other stuff, that you're taking it well too far. Speaking with Barry Shuck.
Well, I think one of the problems was,
sure,
why was he going over and interacting with fans on the road? It's one thing,
yeah,
if you're doing the Lambeau Leap or you're jumping up in your own stadium, because 9 out of 10 people that are there, and if you're running towards the wall, you kind of scan to see, you know, where your jerseys are.
Sure.
And if you want to interact with fans, right there in Las Vegas, those walls are only about 4.5 feet tall, so it's not like it's having to jump up into the stands. It's almost like a college stadium with the wall so low. But I don't know why Murray would even go over there with all these black and silver shirts anyway. Do you?
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is you wouldn't anticipate a fan doing that to you. But, again, I mean, we are living in an age where there's fans who are throwing stuff on the field and all that other stuff. So, at times, you know, people need to take it a tick down. I understand why Kyler did it, but also I'm right with you too, Barry, that him doing it, you welcome that possibility as well, of course, which is frowned upon, but it certainly happens. And as we saw this past weekend, Pro Football Scope with Barry Shuck. Barry, you got an idiom for us today?
Yeah, I do. I am going to give you, when we were talking about this, I'm going to give you the Lambeau Leap.
Sweet.
The stadium for Green Bay is called Lambeau Field. It's named after Curly Lambeau. The Green Bay Packers started as a company team for a meatpacking company that was out of Connecticut, and they had a facility in Green Bay. And the company wanted to get more people involved in camaraderie, and so they wanted to play other communities and other athletic clubs, and that's how the Green Bay Packers started. There was a field, no bleachers in it at all, and Curly Lambeau was a department manager, and he had played college football, and so the owner came to him and said, hey, do you know any people? And he said, yeah, I do. So he called up some buddies, and they got jobs in the factory. And that's how the Green Bay Packers started. So when they, that same field, they built stands, and they built more, and they built more and more. And finally, now it's a stadium. But so it's called Lambeau Field. Well, when a touchdown for a Packer fan, for a Packer player is scored, he runs and jumps into the stands, and of course the fans themselves hug and hold them, and they just kind of stay there for a while. Well, how this got started is 1993, week 16, Green Bay was playing in minus 20 degrees wind chill. They were playing against the Los Angeles Raiders, and quarterback Vince Evans dropped back to pass on a 2nd and 10 early in the fourth quarter. Now, it was a screen pass in the right flats to running back Randy Jordan, who caught the pass, but then was immediately smacked by safety Leroy Butler, who and then Jordan fumbled the ball. Well, the loose ball just kind of, it took one complete bounce, bounced up, and bounced right into defensive end Reggie White's arms. The offensive guard for the Raiders was wrestling with Randy White and trying to drag him out of bounds. Reggie White turned around, and Butler, who had caused the fumble, was running towards him, and Reggie White just flipped it to him. Then Butler had an unimpeded view of the end zone, ran in there for a touchdown. As he's in the end zone, he is pointing his finger at people in the stands. Then he runs over there, and he jumps up. Now, he only got his armpits up there because that wall is 5 feet 2 inches tall. And so the people hugged him. Well, that was the first occurrence of that. They called it the leap. Well, how they got called the Lambeau leap was there was a receiver for when Brett Favre played named Robert Brooks. And what Robert Brooks would do is he would run and jump into the stands every time, and he coined it the Lambeau leap. Now, there's a little bit of a situation with this. The wall on each side is 6 inches taller than the wall in the middle, and so all the veteran players would tell all the rookies to jump on the corners.
Yeah.
So that they would have an issue doing it.
That's
you
great.
Know how you razz rookies.
Oh,
so that's
yeah.
Where the Lambeau leak came from.
Well, spectacular. I remember. So my brother's a Packers fan, and my grandparents lived in Madison, Wisconsin, for the longest time, and we would always we would play football in the basement, you know, with one of those one of those mesh footballs or whatever, and then as a celebration, we'd jump on the couch and we'd always call it the Lambeau leap as well to try to do it. Just like the players did.
Yeah.
So something that is always going to be familiar with, you know, myself and my family, but even, you know, all the fans, everybody knows what the Lambeau leap is. And of course the Packers, one of the most historic NFL franchises in the game. Well, Barry, appreciate our Pro Football Scope talk as always. You have a fantastic rest of the week and enjoy the weekend of games. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah. Enjoy the NFL games this weekend. Thursday night is the Browns and the Steelers. That is on Amazon Prime.
Who are you picking?
I'm going to pick I think it could be a coin toss. I think the Browns are going to get a big lead and then lose it, and then the Steelers will either win or almost win by three.
That's
their MO this year.
Do you think Kenny Pickett plays?
They're going to build a big lead in every game. They're going to build a big lead in every game and let the other team come back.
Do you think Kenny Pickett plays?
I think Mitchell Trubisky's having a good season so far. He looks good.
As do I. Everybody's calling for Kenny, and it's because he's not, you know, Mitch Trubisky is not prolific, and I don't, you know, I feel like Kenny Pickett would be no better than what Mitchell Trubisky is doing right now. So for now, I think that it makes sense that Trubisky's playing rather than Kenny. Just give him as much time as he needs to a play. But hey, Barry, appreciate the time again. Enjoy the game tomorrow and the rest of the weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, my friend. Have a good evening.